What is up, Level Up Nation? Welcome to episode 158 of the Level Up Podcast, your home for gaming and esports news, brought to you by the Overtime Network. My name is John, and I am joined for the 158th time, my gosh, the show is reaching boomer status, Joey, by the king of the courtside. Joey, what's up, buddy?
John, it wouldn't be the 158th episode if we don't have some kind of error working on the Twitch channel. Does it say category Fire Emblem for you?
You know what? There's a very good chance it could, because I scrambled at the last second to definitely do this. So Joey, while I'm making this change, we're going to do what's called filler. How was your Monday on the 27th when we are recording this live?
John, Mondays are always Mondays. It's just, it's that one day where you don't really want to go back to work, but then at the same point you need to go back to work. But if they gave us Monday as an extra weekend day, we wouldn't want to go to Tuesday work. So here we are, and we're back.
Would you make the same? I mean, I think Tuesday would be a little bit easier than Monday.
Like, we have to work Monday.
But Mondays are just so terrible, man. All right, Joey, I think I have a fix, which means I can go on with the introduction. So if you want to follow Joey's daily life as he complains about Mondays versus Tuesdays, make sure to follow him on Twitter at Courtside King. You follow me at Fiasco if you're watching here live on the Twitch broadcast. And you thought you were watching Fire Emblem. Surprise, it's actually a podcast. You can follow handles for you are below those mug shots that you're currently staring at, but you're probably looking for Fire Emblem, so I apologize, you're stuck with us instead. And while you're at it, follow the show on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at the Level Up Podcast. That is at the LVLUP Podcast. And Nation, while you're at it, we're going to give you extra homework. I know everyone loves homework, but this one's pretty easy to ace. Leave us a review on your podcatcher of choice. We love reviews. It goes a long way to help grow the show, reach new audiences. The podcast is now available on Spotify, Stitcher, as well as iTunes and Google Play. Like I said, reviews do go a long way to help reach new listeners. So when you do have a moment, we're not going to put a timetable on it. We're not like your pesky teachers at school. When you just have a free moment or two between your games of League of Legends, feel free to just hop on there, smack down a 5, or I'll be fine with a 4-star as well. 4 or 5-star, anything less, you fail. So 4 or 5-star review on there, that would be awesome. Joey, the LCS and the LEC finally returned. I was starting to go through league withdrawal. TFT could only hold me on for so much. And now we have the pro scene back in Europe and North America, which is just a little tidbit of what we're talking about today on episode 158. Joey, what else are we touching on this week?
Ah, yes, that moment where I forgot to find a way to summarize all of these topics. So, guys, we do bullet point notes here at the Level Up Podcast, and we have about 5 pages of bullet point notes. So some things are going to get cut here and there, but overall, we're going to talk a lot about roster changes, a number of partnerships for leagues as well as teams. I mean, John, there's a bit of everything in here. New facilities being built in esports that come along with really cool partnerships. We have some new green initiatives being put forward by FlyQuest and their new CEO as well. So a lot of different variety on this show.
All right, Joey. you didn't go down the bullet points here. I was kind of hoping you gave me a little bit more time here, but it's fine. I think everyone gets it's an action-packed show this week for episode 158. But Joey, action-packed means we need a little assistance. And, of course, I'm talking about that drink of choice. Joey, I'm not going to make fun of anyone this week for the drink of choice because mine's kind of lame. But I'm just going to throw out, what are you drinking, sir?
John, I'm going to stick with my IPA kick here. I have a Champion of the Sun with another cool label. Oh,
solid.
This is my last IPA, though, so I'll probably be back to wine or bourbon after this one.
Perfect. Funny enough, I just realized it's in a Pepsi glass. I'm drinking Mountain Dew. I am struggling after a very long weekend. I'm not going to go into detail what I did this weekend. There may have been some partying in there, but it was a very long weekend, and I'm not ready for Monday, and I'm dragging on fumes here just a little bit, so I have a glass full of Mountain Dew. Joey, we have our beverages. We have 5 pages of topics we need to get to. I don't want to waste any more time. Let's jump right into gaming and esports news. Let's go.
And now we know the real reason why John is not liking this particular Monday. One thing to rely on, though, John, is FlyQuest. They have some really cool new initiatives coming in. They just announced their new CEO. That is Trisha Megumi Bear Sugita. She's coming in with some all-new Go Green initiatives. This is one thing we're seeing worldwide right now. A lot of people are moving to solar paneling or finding new ways for alternative energy. FlyQuest is looking to do something similar here. They are doing TreeQuest. So FlyQuest, TreeQuest, you get it? LCS performances will lead to the planting of trees worldwide. That's been a huge phenomenon as of recently. Mr. Beast on YouTube really pushed this forward. He got Elon Musk involved, as well as a number of other celebrities planting trees along the world. Now we have TreeQuest here with FlyQuest. So some of these LCS performances, we're looking at one kill by FlyQuest equals one tree planted. One ocean drake by any team equals 10 trees planted. And last but not least, one FlyQuest win equals 100 trees planted. Chat, Squirtle, if you're out there, unfortunately, Golden Guardians did not make the same deal because we know how many trees would get planted from their wins, especially this past weekend. John, I really like this move, though. This is something new. It's a very, very unique initiative. We really haven't seen anything like this, to my knowledge, in the esports realm, especially with organizations yet.
Yeah, I absolutely love this, and I'm going to tell you why. Actually, I love and I hate this. I'm going to start with the positive. 2020, we're going to try to be a little bit more positive this year. The positive is deforestation in the world is at an all-time high. Consumerism really driving deforestation all across the world. You may have heard about the Amazon fires last year in 2019. I actually think they might still be going on. It was that bad. Fires in California burning down what little forest California actually has. It's a good gesture, and I think it's something everyone can really get behind. No one is going to sit here and be like, oh, this is too controversial. Why are you going to plant trees? This is so bad. So in that sense, I think it's great because at the end of the day, plants and trees are what gives us oxygen. We like to breathe oxygen, and if we don't breathe oxygen, we die, and there's no respawn. So, I like this. Now I'm going to tell you why I don't like this. Because it makes me want to root for FlyQuest, and I don't want to root for FlyQuest. I want to stick with my Cloud9 boys. When Cloud9 plays FlyQuest, I'm going to feel a little bad if we end up beating them, especially if we have a clean game and we don't die at all. I would be a little upset if Cloud9 absolutely destroys FlyQuest because that means destroying the planet, and that's not a good thing.
I mean, Cloud9 and clean games, is that even a possibility?
Absolutely not.
Now, I mean, I really like this. Like I said, it's new, it's different. FlyQuest is one of my underdog teams of the year. I really expect them to upset a lot of people's expectations. I think they're going to be a playoff team as well. So keep your eye on FlyQuest. I really like this move. I think there's going to be a lot of trees planted this split. Apex Legends, we have Luminosity adding Shiv to their roster, as well as Team Secret announcing their roster, which includes Yusuf, Noted, and Grego. John, do you recognize Grego?
My boy Grego of Cloud9, going all the way back to the Apex scene for Overwatch. Hey, funny enough, it's called Apex. Back to their OG Overwatch team. Gets dropped from the team, obviously, when Overwatch League comes around the line. Spitfire get picked up. And they go with their Korean Cloud9 roster. Shocker, no one saw that coming. Then Grego kind of had a rebirth in Apex with Cloud9. Then Cloud9 disbanded their Apex team. So excited to see Grego get picked up by Team Secret. He is an amazing player. If you ever have a chance to watch his stream, yes, he's a pro gamer. I understand that. Yes, he gets paid to play video games. This man does not get enough views on his stream and is absolutely absurd for the level of play and entertainment he provides. He's definitely a very underrated streamer, and he is very good at what he does. So I cannot be more. I'm a huge fan of Grego. I've never denied this. I tune into his stream all the time. He's an awesome person, an awesome gamer. So this is a solid pickup for Team Secret. Grego is definitely one of the underrated pros out there.
Yeah, and he's bounced around quite a bit. I'm glad to see him find a home again. And again, it's a new game. It's not quite the game he started out in. But Apex is one of those games that's really started to grow steam. Its pro scene is starting to take off a bit more. It's not quite on the level of Fortnite or even what we see with CSGO or League of Legends. But at the same point, it is one of those scenes that's continuing to grow. This is a pro player that's been around for a while. He's made a lot of connections in different pro scenes. Now he gets another opportunity to perform by himself. Or as himself, I guess. Pittsburgh Knights, this is a new up-and-coming organization. We've seen them jump in a number of times in esports. They continue to put funding forward. They continue to build themselves up. And they, I think eventually this is going to be a premier NA organization as they continue to bring in funding and as more franchise slots potentially open up in other leagues like the LCS later on the road. They have announced the acquisition of Ghost Gaming's Gears roster. Again, Gears, not a top-tier esports scene. It is much smaller. At the same point, it is a growing scene. The prize pools continue to grow. The player numbers continue to grow. So again, not a huge investment here. At the same time, they are continuing to expand their reach. This is them possibly making a new relationship with Microsoft as well, with a number of esports titles possibly coming down the road, especially with Halo Infinite on the slate to be released later this year. So I like this move overall. I think it's a smaller move at the beginning here, but I think it has a lot of potential. I could see this being a deal that allows them into Halo Infinite or possibly into some other Microsoft titles down the road. Moving over to our other Battle Royale title, Fortnite, Team Liquid has added Mitro to their Fortnite roster. Again, there are so many Fortnite moves. I feel like everyone is signing a player every single week. Mitro, obviously one of the more well-known players for his performance in last year's World Cup. He did extremely well in singles and doubles, Team Liquid being one of the bigger organizations out there. I think this is a good move for them. Again, I don't think the roster shuffles end anytime soon for Fortnite. As the esports scene is really continuing to be fleshed out, as organizations are still trying to find their place within the scene amongst all the other players that are solo represented, I think this is Liquid trying to nail down some of the better players in hopes of that scene continuing to grow and expand into allowing more organizational appearances as well.
And this is a pattern we've been seeing with Team Liquid going forward, probably I would say within the last 4 years, really not being afraid to splash their cash around and try to see what hits. And if it doesn't hit, you know, they're not afraid to back out of it either. I do like this move. You know, as much as the Fortnite haters don't like it, Fortnite's really not going anywhere anytime soon. So I think this is a solid move with Team Liquid locking up some really solid talent for that moment where Epic decides, hey, esports is a thing we should care about and take off from there.
And while we see Team Liquid adding talent for their Fortnite squad, we do see Nip Gaming making some moves for their CSGO squad. They are bidding farewell to CSGO veteran Forrest, a longtime player in the scene from Sweden. He is being moved on as Nip is now bringing in Nock, a very young replacement from Gamers Legion. He's one of those players that's really supposed to be up and coming in the CSGO scene. He's been pegged by a number of teams for his talent. A lot of high expectations on him. I think this is the right move from Nip. Really, our expectations for Nip have been there for a while, and they just have not performed to those expectations. Forrest being a veteran, now moving on, I think bringing in young talent might be the right move for Nip here. They still have veteran talent on the team, but now bringing in some young, fresh blood. We've seen it do extremely well for other teams like Fnatic, for example, with Golden and Brolin. We've seen it do well for C9 as well. There's a number of teams that have chosen to find a mix of veteran talent as well as young talent, and it's been very productive and very fruitful for them. I think this is Nip trying to move that direction.
Yeah, and you know, we see this cycle not just in esports, you see it in traditional sports, and you pretty much see it anywhere where there is a roster-based event. You're going to have a rotation. You're going to have a youth movement, I believe is what traditional sports would call it, and there's nothing wrong with that. Having a good mixture of younger talent with some veteran leadership, you know, a lot of players will see that as giving back to the community that essentially raised them, and that's the way it should be. And, you know, unfortunately for some of these veterans, some of these players who have been in the scene forever, you know, that's just the way the industry works. You know, there's a lot of fan favorites out there. Prime example, I'm a big Cloud9 fan. You know, obviously there's a flag behind me. Sneaky's no longer on the active roster for Cloud9 League of Legends. As much as that hurts me as a Cloud9 fan, I would love to see Sneaky play forever. They went younger, you know, and that's a decision they made, and so far, I would argue it's paying off. But that's why you can't make these decisions based upon emotions. You have to look at it from a business perspective. And Joey, you said it. You know, Nip has had high expectations for a long, long time. They haven't been really living up to it, while other teams are going younger and are essentially rebuilding and getting to that point where they're going to be competitive. Nip is looking to go in the same direction now. I do like this move for Nip. Letting go of Forrest, you know, unfortunately that is the way the business works, and hopefully Nip can rebound and start competing again.
Right, and I think they will. Like I said, we've seen this multiple times with other organizations. You said the same thing. I mean, when you have that really the mix of veteran talent with new talent, you allow the veterans to bring in their strategic advice from what they've learned over the years, but they're also able to teach different things to the younger players. These are different ways that this map can traditionally play out that you might not see in solo queue. This is something we've learned from being in the scene for so long. This guy always goes around the corner and aims at this spot. It just always happens. It's always happened that way. That's one of those things that veteran players bring, as well as the cool and collectedness of some of them as well. When you play in these tight competitions, when you're on stage, when you're in those tense moments, veteran players have been there before. A lot more veteran players have ice in their veins compared to rookies, and I think that's one thing they can translate over as well. Now, Forrest did get picked up. He is already on a new team. Dignitas has unveiled their new CSGO roster loaded with veteran Swedish talent. We have Forrest, Get Right, Exist, Freiburg, and then hailing from Denmark, we have Hallzerk. So four Swedes and a Denmark, I don't know what that is, Denmarkian, a Dane. Hello, Monday.
A Denmarkian? What in the world? Yikes.
You know, it's a Monday. You already gave your Monday spiel. Anyway, so this roster is going the exact opposite route of what we said, John. This is going that full veteran route for the most part. I believe everyone, I actually don't know on Hallzerk too much, but the rest of them are vets of the scene. They've been around for a while. Swedish talent in CSGO is the premium from what we've seen in previous years. Denmark with the Danes also bringing in quite a bit of talent if you look at Astralis's roster. So I like this overall. For Dignitas, I believe they're just getting back into the CSGO scene. I think going the veteran route is probably a safe route for them. That will allow them to establish themselves, get a feel for the scene again, and then be able to start bringing in some young talent to replace some of these veteran players, or maybe to have them as an academy system to be mentored, in a sense, from these players. At the same point, we mentioned it last week, we're mentioning it again this week, CSGO is undergoing some very major changes. The viewership number, the player count, all of that is up across the board, but they have still decided they want to restructure some of their esports scene, so it is breaking off into a few other tournaments, some closing down, some starting up. With that being said, the veterans know the teams, the veterans know the players, but the level of competition, the way the competition is played out, could be very different moving forward. And I didn't mention it, but it's Coach Fifth Loren is going to be the coach for that Dignitas team also coming in.
You sure it's not Coach Denmarkian?
Ah, ha, ha, ha. We got jokes over there on a Monday. Partnerships. Collegiate Star League is now the official and preferred collegiate partner of DreamHack, mainly known for their CSGO. At least that's one of their biggest titles out there. They have signed a two-year partnership that runs through the end of 2021. John, this is a very, very big partnership. Right now, the collegiate space and the high school space are very open for grabs. We've seen PlayVersus grab a lot of that territory in major games like Fortnite and League of Legends. A few other games out there. I feel like Dota might be one of them as well as a number of sport titles. Now we have another organization coming in Collegiate Star League. They're laying their foot down for the CSGO scene. This is very big in the sense that now we're not only looking at one organization like we see with collegiate sports with the NCAA. We now have multiple bodies looking over these esport titles.
Which is really a smart way to do it. Unfortunately, when one body has all that power, some really, really bad decisions get made. Joey, you already threw out the NCAA out there. That's probably the best example of what esports should not do. It's a smart move. This company's been around since 2009, running collegiate tournaments kind of, you know, here and there. You know, they have a very large participation rate with universities already. So it kind of makes sense to kind of make this partnership, you know, official, you know, especially with DreamHack. You know, DreamHack is a major name in the esport industry. And a lot of events occur at DreamHack, and now you're going to, you know, partner with them to bring in the collegiate scene and kind of give them more exposure. You know, that was something that, you know, Heroes of the Storm didn't do so well, but Heroes of the Dorm was probably their best viewed competition ever for Heroes of the Storm. Whenever that would come on, you know, these are college kids essentially competing for their tuition, and it was fun. It was a whole different level of excitement. Like, there's a reason why people like college sports more than pro sports. And it's not just because, oh, the play style is different. But, you know, they have something to prove to get to that next level. When you're already at that next level, you just pretty much play to stay there. But when you have something to prove, you play differently. And you even see that in collegiate esports. You're not a pro yet. If you want to make it to that next level, you got to play well at the collegiate level. And, you know, if that means, you know, funky compositions, weird strategies, if they work and it comes across as, you know, as successful, it's great. That's what makes college esports, like college sports, so much fun to watch. And this is a great partnership with a company who's been around doing this since 2009, going on, what, their 11th year in operation now. And now they're going to have a two-year partnership with DreamHack. This is going to be so good for collegiate esports.
Right, and this could be the big break for Collegiate Star League as well. Now you have that high-level partner that you've worked with a bit in the past, but now you really have the name to it as the official partner of DreamHack. That's going to be a lot of credibility as well. And when you're looking at bringing your program to colleges, one of the things that is with esports right now is just the skepticism. Is esports really worth it? Is it taking kids away from athletics? Should we bring esports to our college? Should we offer scholarships? Now you have another organization coming in that can either work your competitions as a contractor, that can just come on a volunteer basis, that gives the opportunity for you to ask questions to. I don't know 100% how Collegiate Star League works in and of itself. At the same point, I think having another resource out there for universities and colleges, as well as possibly high schools as well down the line, to be able to jump into and ask questions to, I think is very beneficial as well. Now, the other big organization in, I guess you call them youth esports at this point, though all esports feel youth, but in high school and collegiate esports is PlayVersus. They have partnered with Epic Games to operate Fortnite competitions in high schools and colleges. This is after they already have their official partnership with Riot Games for League of Legends, possibly now Legends of Runeterra and their other games coming down the road as well. So PlayVersus matching right up with Star League here as far as bringing in Fortnite and Epic Games, because that is a giant partnership. Epic under Epic as well as also Psyonix, which has Rocket League. So this could end up being a Fortnite and Rocket League partnership and possibly other games that Epic has in development as well. So another big win for PlayVersus. As they, in a sense, lose ground to a competitor, they're also gaining ground with a really big partnership here and possibly one of the biggest ones in youth esports right now. Riot Games and Louis Vuitton. John, I know you got your jacket on pre-order over there for $4,000 or whatever it was. The multifaceted partnership between Riot and Louis Vuitton continues into 2020 with the unveiling of a sleek True Damage Senna Prestige skin. It is up for grabs via Prestige tokens in-game. John, will you be picking this one up?
No. Look, the skin looks a lot better than the product line they put out, but no, I'm not. I'm trying to avoid putting like the on Twitch joke, oh, click here, it's an adult stream kind of thing. I'm trying to choose my words very carefully.
Now, this is very different. Let's just say that. When you're looking at the apparel, we're talking $4,000 for apparel versus something you can earn from playing in game. This is a little different here.
I will say this. I am kind of surprised. I am and I'm not surprised that they went with prestige tokens. Prestige tokens, you know, it is a little harder to come by, but I would have imagined this would have been like a 50,000 Riot Point purchase. The equivalent of a $4,000 hoodie for an in-game skin. That's what I was kind of expecting, where you were legit going to have to spend real-life money to get this skin. So I am a little surprised it is on prestige tokens, but at the same time, with how hard it is to get enough prestige tokens to unlock it, that I'm not so surprised about. But mainly just the fact that you're not going to have to use real money, that's probably the biggest shocker to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's a premier skin. Louis Vuitton is known for premier fashion. This is their way of putting a premier skin in game. Okay, yeah. You and I both being fashion enthusiasts, we all know here. But at the same point, I do like the skin. I think this, if I have prestige tokens at the end of the year, I would definitely consider this skin. I feel like the Louis Vuitton skins, the Kiana and now the Senna here, are very, very well detailed. And if you look at the intricate details of like the clothing and the fringes around the blade and all of that, it looks very detailed compared to some of the other skins we get throughout the year. So I do really like the skin overall. Again, it's a little hard to get to, but I like the fact that they did it through earning it as opposed to actually spending money on it. Now, if we spent 50,000 Riot Points over our lifetime in League of Legends, that's always a possibility. At the same point, I do like the fact that this allows people that don't necessarily have to spend a ton of money to get a skin, it allows them the opportunity to earn it as well.
Now, my only issue, and I will agree with you, the detail on these skins are fantastic. When are you actually going to be able to look at the detail on this skin? No one plays League of Legends zoomed in. Okay, cool. The splash art looks amazing. You're going to see that for, what, all of 30 seconds on Champ Select?
I've seen some low load-in times.
Well, you know, there's the people connecting to the McDonald's Wi-Fi and playing. Shout out to Scorsel for that diss. I appreciate it. but other than that, you know, you're not really going to have, you know, you're not, it's not one of these graphically intensive games where you sit there and like you first load in, you're just like, wow, I'm blown away by these graphics. Yes, League has gone through graphical updates, but let's be real here. That's like saying World of Warcraft's graphical update is now on the same level as like Anthem or as Destiny, or, you know, let's throw some other games that look absolutely amazing graphically up there as well. You know, you're not, it's not the same comparison. You're not going to zoom in on your character on the Rift to take in the details on the blade or on the gun or whatever. So I don't know. I have a follow-up question.
I just have to ask a follow-up here. John, approximately how many skins do you own in League of Legends that you can only see these minute details on? I wish you guys had face cam on the podcast right now.
Chromas included or no?
We'll go no chromas for the sake of this.
Oh my gosh. You know what, Joey? Go on to the next topic. I will launch my League client and I'm going to give you an exact number. I'm going to have some fun with this.
Okay, you do that. So my point making this argument here is people are still going to buy skins even if you can only see small details on the Riot or when you're loaded on Howling Abyss or loaded into Summoner's Rift. Yes, the skins, you get some cool graphical effects. Yes, you get some recolors here and there. But regardless of it, someone's going to like the skin. Someone is going to buy that skin. And that's exactly what we're going to see here. I think this skin is going to sell very well. We've seen a lot of the prestige skins do very well for the people that go for the tokens. I think this will be no different. League of Legends. Yes, the pro scene is back in North America. It is back in Europe. And it is, that number is going to be scary. It is back in Brazil. Riot Brazil has confirmed that the CBL, their professional League of Legends scene, will be moving to franchising. This is huge, John. Not only do we now have the NA and LEC or EU scenes franchised, now we're going to move into Latin America, into South America with the Brazilian scene, moving into franchising as well. This is a huge move for League of Legends. It most likely means that we're eventually going to see all Riot Games leagues eventually franchised as well. Okay, give us that skin count.
Not including chromas. And it's not that bad because I have a decent-sized champ pool.
It's not that bad. That is a great way to start this.
135 skins.
Holy crow.
With, if you want to include chromas, add another 27. yeah.
And they're only these little blurs in the graphical presence of League of Legends.
I don't know. Joey, listen. I need every Lux skin, period. I know the League community hates Lux. I love Lux. And I need every single one of her skins and chromas and everything else, too. Joey, I have a problem. This is essentially what I'm trying to get at when it comes to League of Legends.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Someone actually just invited me to a TFT game, and I'm going to exit the client.
Decline
that.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, if you want to pick up that skin or other skins, you can do so with the CBL, that Brazilian Riot Games League, with MasterCard. They're now presenting sponsor. MasterCard is a sponsor we've seen throughout esports multiple times. They've worked with Riot Games before with the LCS as well. Now moving into this slowly growing CBL, I think is what it's actually called. Really the South American League down there for League of Legends. MasterCard being a sponsor is huge. MasterCard has high ratings. Throughout this year is expected to have a lot of growth in the stock market as well as they continue to invest in multiple entities. It looks like Brazilian League of Legends is going to be one of those.
Yeah, that's great. You know, Brazil is probably one of the faster growing regions in the league scene. They've been very competitive in really cross league play, international play, if you will. So really great that Brazil is going to be moving to franchising. It's going to stabilize that region even more when it comes to the League of Legends professional scene. And it's probably going to help it grow even faster than what it already is. So I'm really excited for Brazil to move to franchising. Makes a lot of sense. And the partnership with MasterCard, they're everywhere already when it comes to esports and traditional sports. But I do really enjoy having a major name like MasterCard really partnering with the CBL when they're making this move to franchising. It helps bring in the stability and legitimacy of this move for that region.
CBL is a tough one, isn't it?
It is.
I feel like we just don't talk about it enough. It throws me off every time. LCS does not throw me off, though. It finally dropped the NA. or just LCS this season, and they have added Bud Light as the official beer of the LCS and also extended their partnership with Red Bull. So sponsorships for beverages, they are flowing in the LCS, John. Red Bull being that energy drink, Bud Light being that official beer. I believe this is the second esport that Bud Light has jumped into after their sponsorship of the NBA 2K League.
Overwatch League as well.
Oh, Bud Light's with them too?
Yes, they are.
I didn't know that, so I'm sorry, Bud Light. I will pay more attention to that.
No, I mean,
is that new for this season, or was that previous?
That was last year.
Rip.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's, if you pay attention to some of the critics of esports and maybe some of the voices within esports that are very critical of how esports is growing, Bud Light is one of those names that's a staple with traditional sports. You know, you can't go to a basketball game, a football game, a hockey game, baseball game, anything without seeing Bud Light there. And that's only if they have the Anheuser-Busch partnership. If they're stuck with Miller Lite, then you're not going to see this. But what I'm trying to say is beer is very normal in traditional sports, and they've been making their way into esports. It makes sense. The age demographic that watches professional esports, a good majority of them are of drinking age, which makes sense for these partnerships. Now, yeah, there is going to be some crossover with people who are underage watching these events, you know, and some parents have raised concerns, you know, but the problem is these are the same parents that take their kids to a hockey game and are drinking a Bud Light right next to their own kids and, you know, 20,000 other strangers. So, you know, I like this. It's a smart move. I mean, if Bud Light is making this investment, that's kind of a good thumbs up that, hey, we recognize what you're doing. We recognize the stability of what you're doing and the growth potential, and we want to be a part of it by giving you an iconic name and a brand that you can, you know, plaster all over your esport arenas and your teams can talk about, and it's going to bring traction. It's going to bring that marketability for teams and your league. It's a totally smart move. Same thing with Red Bull. You know, they may not be the original OG energy drink, but they're the ones that have marketed and branded the best, and it makes complete sense for them to double down with Red Bull. It's great moves.
Okay, Bud Light, there's a lot of questions on this move. We've talked about it a lot before, especially when the NBA 2K League announced this as their sponsor. We really dove heavily into it. The big question, like John briefly mentioned on, is the fact that parents are looking at this like, there's a lot of teenagers that watch this, a lot of younger kids that watch the scene, and now Bud Light being a sponsor, how does that really really mix into this whole environment? Like, if you're trying to advertise to younger audiences and now you're bringing an alcoholic beverage on, does that really mix? I think the counter to that is, one, a lot of the players are above the age of 18 and 21, depending on the region you're looking at. So 18, you should be, I'm going to say, responsible enough to understand that alcoholic beverages should be consumed above the age of 21. And then at the age of 21, obviously people can consume beverages in the United States. So those are two different things you're looking at there from that perspective. But also parents. You and I went to the Rocket League World Championship. There were a number of younger kids there alongside parents, as well as people around our age as well. So you have young adults, but you also have younger children with parents. What's another way for parents to find it more enjoyable? Have a drink here and there. So I think that honestly might be the audience that Bud Light's targeting a bit more with this, is those older players as well as the parents bringing people to competitions. I mean, there's so many children that go to these esports competitions, but most of them are brought by a parent or chaperone. So I think this is another way to really allow them to feel more involved into the esports events as well.
Joey, did you just say Rocket League is more enjoyable for adults if they're drunk?
No, I'm just saying, like, okay, if you're there with three or four kids, I mean, it would be nice to have one drink or two, right?
I'm more of the 2-to-1 rule, meaning two drinks for every one child you bring to an event.
Okay, see, that's a bad chaperone, ladies and gentlemen. be careful with that one. Spring finals, John, are headed to Frisco, Texas. Are you going to be joining those?
I try to stay out of Texas as much as possible, so I'm going to go ahead and say no.
Yeah, I think this is interesting. When I think Texas, I don't really think Frisco for the main event for Riot Games. At the same point, I like the fact they continue to expand. We've seen the finals in multiple cities before, and now moving down to Texas. This is one of the first times I remember it being in Texas. It could have been there recently, but this is one of the most recent that come to mind for me. So I like the move. I like the fact they continue to try new venues. And now, this is an interesting one. So, when we look at the LCS, some people consider it a sport, some people don't consider it a sport. If you consider it a sport, or at least if you consider it mainstream entertainment in the competitive form, let's say. It is now the third largest sport in NA, pulling in an average of 124,000 viewers per minute. The NBA is in second with 471,000 viewers, and MLB slots into fourth with 102,000 viewers. So we're looking at the LCS pulling in over 20,000 more viewers per minute than the MLB, being the number three or number four right now in North America.
Yeah, and I like what Monte Cristo said about this. While these numbers are very impressive, these are also average numbers for the NBA and Major League Baseball that average 82 games a season plus versus what are we going to go with? You know, there's 10 weeks in a split. You know, are all these people watching all five games per day, you know, for 2 days back to the back? Probably not. Versus, like, you know, the fact that Major League Baseball has 162 games, hockey has 82, basketball has 82. The NFL has 16 with, you know, 17 weeks, 16, one with a bye week. You know, so, I mean, the numbers, you know, while they mean a lot, there's other factors to take into consideration. Now, I'm not trying to downplay what League of Legends and the LCS have been able to do, because it's still very impressive. But putting it into perspective, you know, they still have a long way to go. Let's not be satisfied with where we are right now for the LCS in viewership, because it can continue to grow. It can continue to get better. This is a great stepping stone, kind of like a checkpoint, if you will, to the next step of where we want to go with esports and the LCS. So I think it's a good starting point, a good check mark, a good benchmark for that journey to the top. But it needs to be taken into the overall perspective when comparing it to these other leagues with massive amounts of games.
100%. And that's not the only thing to consider, because there's ways to rebut that. There's ways to support that. I mean, if you look at the NFL, it is by far the largest and it has by far the fewest games played. So that kind of goes against that argument in a sense. But then on the opposite side, I also don't think this keeps in mind stadium attendance. When you look at the LCS arena, that is much, much smaller than all of the Major League Baseball parks put together. So when you keep in mind the actual spectators in person, that's going to be thousands more that gets raised as far as actual viewing. So I don't 100% know how much it dives into the actual in-person viewing versus just the televised or stream viewing. I think that's also a big, big factor to consider. Now, with all that being said, with just television or streaming, MLB is on a decline, MLS is on a decline, while the LCS is on an incline. So I think there's a few different things to take away from that as well, at least when you look at the stream/televised audience. LEC, so our European counterparts over there in EU, they have welcomed back partners in Logitech, Warner Music. Oh, this one's tough. I believe it's Takibo? That is why we are based out of NA and not EU. And we have Biko as well. Not to mention, John, my new favorite sponsor of the LEC, and that is KitKat, because we know with the EU broadcast, there has to be breaks, there has to be pauses, and why not have that break with a KitKat? I think that is one of the most brilliant sponsorships and partnerships that we have seen in recent years. Absolutely love it. On top of that, the LEC announced where their spring finals as well as summer finals will be. We have the spring finals headed to Budapest, and then the summer finals are moving up to Sweden in Malmo.
Yeah, so... The KitKat one cracks me up. I've been saying this since I like had an interest in the business side of entertainment and sports. You can sell everything. If you're in marketing, you can literally sell everything. And this is a prime example of it. The LEC, I almost said the EULCS because it's still habit. The LEC is notorious for the amount of pauses that they have. And sponsoring this out to KitKat for a give me a break moment is pure genius. I absolutely love it. You know, next thing you know, you're going to have like the State Farm First Blood. You know, you're going to have, you know, or even better, the Sour Patch Kid First Blood. Don't get sour, get even kind of thing. You know, it's Joey, I knew you liked that one. You can giggle. But you can sell everything and bring money in this way. I've worked with my old high school in this capacity of with them selling different things to these games. I mean, high school football is still something that is massive all throughout the country. I mean, you get thousands and thousands of people showing up to high school football games. sell everything. The first touchdown is brought to you by local Jim Bob's restaurant down the street. Just sell all of it. Make that money. And I love to see the LEC is doing it. It's absolutely fantastic. I love that. Yeah, all the partnerships are great. Adding Kit Kat in there, freaking love it. And Joey, I would want to go to Budapest for this. I would love to visit Budapest.
Oh, I was kind of thinking Malmo.
I'd go to both, but Budapest is kind of on my bucket list.
Oh, the Budapest bucket list. I like it. And John, you hit on it a bit on the organizational side. Sponsors, there are so many opportunities to find. And this is one thing we're hoping we see more from organizations as well as teams as we move forward. I mean, organizations and leagues, excuse me, because there are so many different opportunities to really find sponsorship positions. On the opposite side, look at how many sponsors are renewing with both these leagues. It continues to show how much they feel like they are finding return in this. We have, what, four this week that we mentioned? I think there were six or seven last week between the LCS and LEC. So sponsors are finding reasons to renew. They're enjoying what they've got out of the return. And just look at you and I. We already know the Kit Kat one because of this. I doubt we forget that all spring split, if not forever. I mean, it is just a brilliant use of a sponsorship. There are so many more uses like this out there. I think sponsors are going to find it very rewarding to buy into esports, as well as organizations and leagues trying to find spots for those sponsors. Team Vitality has entered into a multi-year partnership with Corsair. Corsair continuing to make moves. Also one of the biggest fan makers out there for PCs, peripherals. It also does mice and keyboards. Corsair just continues to make a great name for itself. On top of that, we also have Fnatic finding a new sponsor and PC specialist, and they will be their new official gaming partner. I think these are good moves, John. I don't think we need to elaborate too much on them for time's sake. At the same point, I love the fact that we continue to see more esport organizations find new sponsorship opportunities.
Yeah, I think it's great. Fnatic really leading the way with their new partnership and Vitality with Corsair. Corsair is a solid e-sport. Did I jump the gun on Fnatic?
No.
No, you mentioned Fnatic. I'm just, for some reason, I thought I, yeah, anywho. Yeah, no, great for Fnatic and Vitality partnering with Corsair. Solid move. Corsair makes a solid product. I'm biased. I'm more of a Logitech fanboy. Corsair, a solid number two behind Logitech. I had a Corsair keyboard for the longest time. Absolutely freaking loved it. Then switched over to the Logitech Pro, but that's neither here nor there. Solid partnership. I love it for Vitality. I love it with Fnatic.
Absolutely vital for teams to find sponsorships like we see Team Vitality here. Gen G. Oh, actually, thank you, John, for highlighting that. Before we move on, Fnatic has unveiled their new logo, their new Fnatic, as they call themselves, heading into 2020 in this new decade. Before I mention anything, what are your thoughts on the new logo, John? So this is their third iteration of the logo. It started out very simple, then it got a little bit more complex, and now we're back to a simple view with some reasoning behind the dimensions, but just on the look overall, what are your thoughts?
So I actually really enjoyed the move from their original to the second generation logo. I was a big fan of that. The move to the current logo, I am not a fan of it at all. I can't believe I'm going to say this. It's a little too edgy for me. I feel like it's just kind of thrown there. Like, Joey, if you don't mind, I know you're wearing a Fnatic jersey. If you can show us what the second generation logo. So, yeah. So, essentially, the difference between it, okay, I'm going to try to describe this for our podcast listeners. The first logo was a lot more rounded. They had more rounded edges. The second logo was a little bit more sharp. They changed the shade of orange just a wee bit to a little bit more of a darker orange. But overall, not too much changed in it. Going from the second generation to the third, they got rid of that beautiful dot at the very top. They essentially took that middle stick between the funky little F's and the C, kind of slid her right up in there and made everything super angled and everything else. I'm just not a fan of it. Like, I like the one Joey has on. I even go back to the original one. The second one I just think is just, it's not a rebrand. It's not as bad as some of the rebrands we've talked about, so I won't put it in that same category. I'm just, you know what, kids out there, I know you've heard your parents say this, and it still gets me down to this day. I'm not mad. I'm just very disappointed.
Simple. So I'll be honest. That's exactly how I started out. I am starting to like the logo a lot now.
Of course.
As a Fnatic fan for years, I did not want to rebrand. I was not really wanting anything to be rebranded. I really missed the dot still, if I'm being completely honest. I missed the little move in the F, too, like the little, I don't know, what, little stick, the little... that thing, stick it right in there, as John says.
I said slid up right in there, not stick it in there. My goodness.
Either way, I need to put
the mature filter on here real quick for Twitch.
I mean, I think it's interesting the fact they're rebranding. I mean, you're looking at arguably the most popular esport organization in the world. It's right up there. It's got to be them, SKT, Team Liquid are really probably your top three right now. FaZe is making some moves as well as Cloud9. But when you look at our G2's, another one to mention for that top five, top six range. But Fnatic being up there, arguably top three on anyone's list. This is a questionable move for me, actually changing your logo because of brand awareness. Now, with that being said, John, you mentioned it. It doesn't look like they made many major changes. Obviously, you get rid of the little foot off the F. You get rid of the dot for the I. You round things a bit more here and there. But I've read a lot of articles on it, particular from the CEO, Sam Matthews, of why they made the change. And I think really the vision behind it is very smart. They're entering a new decade. They made these particular changes as well as the angles for certain reasons. They're trying to make it just cleaner and easier to appeal to on different products and different things like that. So I think the reasoning behind it, and again, you guys got to read the articles because I'm very much summarizing them. I kind of like the reasoning behind it. And I think because of that and looking at it so much over the last week, it's starting to grow on me a bit more as well.
You know, just put Fnatic in its new font, Comic Sans, and call it a day.
Slow it down there, sir. Just because you got two wins in the LCS does not mean you can jump all over my boys.
There's nothing to do with that.
John, you know what you need? You need a little time with Gen G and their new announced
esports
and beauty collaboration, and that is Benefit Beauty. The collaboration between Benefit Beauty and Gen G will be a game face makeup series hosted by Snitchery and featuring popular female gamers. I'm curious if they allow Sneaky to come on this, John. I mean, after all the new cosplays we've really seen him come out with, he's starting to border that line of what could be seen as makeup in gaming and esports. I think this is an interesting partnership. It's very unique. Very similar to FlyQuest in the sense it is starting to make new trends and find new ways into marketing for esports. This isn't something I'm particularly interested in, but with the growing number of female gamers and female esport players out there, I think this is a great move by Gen G.
It's a smart move for multiple reasons. Gen G being, Gen G is Korean, right?
They're from California, but yes, they have a base in Korea.
Okay. So they have a huge presence in Korea already. Korea is known, and I hate that I know this. My excuse right now is my sister is in the makeup industry, and I get everything from her in regards to this information. Apparently, Korean beauty products are like world best, like faker status, if you will. And a lot of Asian countries, even the guys wear makeup. When you take a look at like K-pop idols, when you take a look at movie stars and everything, like they wear makeup on their day-to-day life, not just when they're on set, not just when they're in front of the camera, not just when they're performing in front of a large crowd. So it doesn't surprise me with them making this move. It kind of makes sense. I mean, it seems weird that an esport organization is doing essentially makeup tutorials or like makeup glam series or whatever. It's so weird even saying that. But it does actually make sense. I would argue this makes more sense than Turtle Wax, I believe that was FlyQuest, but, It's weird, but at the same time, like I said, it does make sense. Cosplay is a big part of the gaming and world entertainment world, if you will. And Sneaky's a prime example of it, Joey. He just came out with his Zaya cosplay, and that was just... Look, we all know his girlfriend does his makeup. He said it before, but still, that's just way... It is way too good. It's like on scary level good. But yeah, I mean, it makes sense. I know, you know, some people are going to be like, okay, this is a little weird, but it actually does make sense to me. And I think it's actually going to be one of the more successful partnerships, not just with Gen G, but I wouldn't be surprised if this actually expands to other teams as well.
Oh, no, 100%. And I think this is a really good forward move from Gen G looking at the female audience as well. With those numbers continuing to climb, there's a number of female streamers as well as cosplayers, like you mentioned, out there who already do YouTube series or streams based on makeup and based on content. So now you're looking at this overall. This is Gen G as an organization buying into that fad, trying to find ways for those streamers to connect to new audiences, as well as their organization to connect to new female gamers out there as well. 100 Thieves has unveiled their new Cash App compound. John, If you saw the video of this, this sucker is gorgeous. This is going to be the new home for 100 Thieves Esports, entertainment, and apparel. Make sure to check out the tour. It is on YouTube as well, which they signed that exclusivity agreement with YouTube. Go check that out. The tour is gorgeous. I mean, the tour of the building is gorgeous. The building itself just looks so... I'm going to go with modern is probably the best word. It's just very modern, very clean, very esport aesthetic. I think it's going to be a really cool building to continue building that brand in. And I feel like the way they designed the building really fits with that 100 Thieves brand as well. Anything else on that after your cough attack over there?
remind me to tell you after the podcast a joke I made at work about that. Joey, the video of the new facility is amazing. It looks fantastic. 100 Thieves is really doing it right. Their apparel is, I would argue, you know, for as small of an organization as they are, they're, I'm not going to say outperforming, because I feel like they've really earned what they have. 100 Thieves is an amazing apparel line, esport organization. They're right up there with like FaZe Clan, where it's not just an esport organization. It's borderline a lifestyle choice. Like, you know, if you identify with FaZe and like everyone involved with FaZe, then, you know, you're rocking FaZe gear, FaZe apparel, FaZe clan tags and all this other stuff. My nephew is in a knockoff FaZe clan in Fortnite. It's so weird.
A knockoff FaZe clan.
No, because obviously not real FaZe, you know. And hey, FaZe, if you're looking for a Fortnite player, my nephew, you know, I'm his agent. So, you know, but it makes sense. And this is just a step in that same direction where now they have this amazing facility. Cash App is an application that a lot of people know, a lot of people use. It makes a lot of sense combining two well-known companies together in a partnership. Definitely check out the YouTube video. It is an absolutely fantastic facility. We're seeing a lot more organizations doing this. The Alienware compound with Team Liquid as an example. Also, you know, a lot of organizations doing this, 100 Thieves really doing it right. And it's going to pay off.
And one more joining 100 Thieves is a partnership between Dignitas and Verizon, where they're partnering up to launch the nation's first 5G esports training facility, which will be titled the Verizon 5G Gaming Center. So two new facilities announced this week. Again, John, you've mentioned some before. Team Envy is another one that built a facility. Misfits has built a facility with Alienware over in Germany. Team Liquid, one over in California. So many, many esports facilities continue to pop up. Another big one here between Verizon and Dignitas, as well as 100 Thieves. Call of Duty League announces Astro Gaming as their official headset and mix amp of the 2020 season. And that is in addition to the sponsorship they already have with PlayStation, as PlayStation is the console of choice for that league. Moving to other news, because we are getting a bit later in the show, so we're going to have to speed things up a tiny bit here, Fiasco. According to Decay, ESL is set to announce 24 teams in total for a new format of the ESL Pro League, new B-Site CSGO League. So, again, we talked about this a bit last week. There's a lot of CSGO leagues currently reforming or currently changing the way they operate or currently closing down in favor of another style of a league. So, again, ESL here, 24 teams. It'll be running about the same time as the second league, which is the B-Site League. This one in particular has Thorin as well as Monte Cristo working alongside of it, as well as On Fire Moses. So a lot of big commenter and caster talent with the new B-Site League. This league is rumored to contain Cloud9, MIBR, Mad Lions, Dignitas, Gen G, and Crazy to be the first few teams in this league. It will be playing offline matches for the regular season in LA beginning in March. Few other big things here. It is going to be a $2 million franchise fee. That, in comparison, League of Legends was $10 million to start franchises within that league for North America and Europe. Then over in Overwatch League, it varied quite a bit. I believe $10 million was around the lowest, $10 to $15 million, let's say, up to about $30 to $35 million for some of those league spots. So $2 million here for this new CSGO league with B-Site. In addition to that, teams will not be able to participate in ESL. Now teams are being forced to make a choice. This, to my knowledge, is something we haven't seen a ton in CSGO yet. A lot of the tournaments have run back-to-back or have run within each other, but the times worked out for matches where one team could jump on this match because it's not a LAN, it's just online, and then they could jump into another league right afterwards. This is really going to change things up. With it being a LAN event and being held in LA and during the same time as ESL, people that are participating in the B-Site will no longer be able to participate in the new ESL League format. So that is a big, big thing for a lot of organizations to consider. It looks like these five or six have already considered that and are buying into the new B-site with all of their commentator talent, as well as the new league format, kind of, I don't know if you want to say led, but at least inspired by Thorin, who is a big voice in the CSGO community. So a lot to really unpack here, John. We don't have to dive in a ton because there's so many details still out there. But overall, with all these changes, I think the biggest thing to take away is the fact that teams are now going to have to choose, moving into the spring, which league they're going to participate in based on the invites they receive. Moving over into Epic and Fortnite. Epic is cracking down on illegal signaling. Oh, John, this one's fun. Epic has reserved the right to take action against any kind of in-game communication between opponents in official tournament matches. This includes, but is not limited to, pickaxe swinging. Yes, the way you get resources in-game. Emoting, the thing that everyone does, pro player or person on their couch in their living room. We have toy tossing and jumping. So we are looking at pickaxe swinging and jumping, two very core mechanics in Fortnite, now being used as signals, and now possibly where Epic can come in and say, hey, you swung that pickaxe very questionably. Now you're going to be banned from our event. Like, this is obnoxious to me. I get it. But this is such a vague way of putting it. Pickaxe swinging and jumping is building an issue too? Is shooting an issue? Like, if I shot toward a direction, I could be signaling something. Can I no longer shoot in game? Like, I get it. I'm sure they're going to go through and review these things before they hand out any penalties. At the same point, this is such a vague release, in my opinion.
Building counterclockwise four stories, automatic disqualification because you're signaling to the other team. Joey, this is absolutely absurd. First off, kudos to the people who actually came up with this idea for pickaxe swinging as a way to cheat. I would love to have been a fly in that wall where someone in Epic goes, hey, guys, so we noticed people are swinging pickaxes at trees a lot more than normal. Why? I think someone's cheating. Or, like, what are they swinging a pickaxe wide open in the middle of a field? Like, this is absolutely stupid. Like, what are they doing, banging on a trash can to let people know? You know, oh no, someone's, you know, there's a team coming around the corner or something. I'm sorry, the Houston Astros don't play
Fortnite. Hey, yo.
But, you know, it's just one of those things where it's just like this Epic. Look, a lot of people in professional esports already take the fact that you just really don't give a crap about the esports scene as a huge knock against your company. This sounds absolutely absurd, like you're paranoid. Like, all of a sudden, you do care about the esports scene? Like, Joey, I'm going to have to re-download Fortnite and see how many emotes it takes for me to get banned in Fortnite.
Okay, now, wait a minute. This is an official match, John. I don't think you're going to the Fortnite World Cup or anything anytime soon. So this will not be in regular games. If John wants to signal with his random opponent by swinging his pickaxe around to the right direction, then he can do so and not be harmed. If he swings that pickaxe in an official competition to show where another player is or something, then John might be having the banhammer swung on him.
He's over there. He's that way. He's over there.
Unique. Hey, kids are creative. You got to give them that, right? Legends of Runeterra, the CCG from Riot Games, released this past week in its beta stage. This is going to be a competitor with Hearthstone, with Magic, with Artifact, if it's still around, from Valve. So, John, did you get a chance to try this beta? And if so, what are your first impressions?
Joey, I did not. And the reason I did not is because I have so much trauma from you making fun of me playing Hearthstone and not being able to get past the Innkeeper. So digital card games, I've kind of pushed off to the side. And there's no one to blame but yourself, Joey. So I did not play it. I did subject myself to your Discord stream of it, and I was very impressed of what I saw, but I just couldn't take it, so I had to turn your stream off too much. I had too many flashbacks to the Innkeeper because of you.
Oh, my gosh. So I did play it. I am now I don't know where we started, if it's Iron or Silver that you start in, but I've moved up one division. I played 5 ranked games and went 4-1. So far, I like it. I feel like the tutorials were pretty good. There's a lot of them, though. There's about 3 to 4 beginning ones, and then there's like 7 other tutorials after that. I like it. I don't know. I feel like there were too many tutorials. I think I learned too much in such a quick amount of time that it really, some of it stuck, some of it didn't. The biggest thing to take away is it's very turn-based. If someone uses something, the other person automatically gets a turn to use something as well. I think that takes a while to learn, because if you and I are playing, John, And let's say one round we have three turns between us. But then the next round, I play something, you play something, I play something, you play something, and we're still going. Then that particular round could be six turns, eight turns. So that's one of the biggest takeaways, and I think that's also where the time management comes into play as well, because games can get much longer if people are continuing to play cards back and forth. So part of the strategy, part of the time management is going to come down to how long should this round last? What do I need to play this round to really get the best out of my mana, but also not show my hand in a sense? I love the hero play. I love the art style. The art style of the game is really cool. I think the turns are the biggest thing to take away as far as what's going to take some time to learn. The other thing though, John, when we look at this game compared to like a Hearthstone or Magic, the biggest takeaway is the spending of money. With this game, you are limited on how much money you can spend, and there is a ton that you can earn in game. There are regular weekly rewards. There are rewards just from playing on a daily basis. Just like League of Legends has, there's win of the day rewards. One of the biggest things for me is the fact that you get, I can't remember what they're called, but it's like, let's say you want an epic card. You get like a wild card for epics, and then you can spend that wild card on whatever epic card you want. That's a big takeaway for me. With Hearthstone, if I want an epic card, I have to spend a ton of money to keep opening packs and hope I get it. And if I don't get it, I have to burn all my cards into dust, which is the currency. And then after a million years and $1,000 spent, then you can eventually buy the card you want. So Legends of Runeterra has the ability to buy cards with that dust-like currency, but they also have this wild card system in there that's much easier to get those cards as well. So really cool. Check it out if you haven't already. It is in beta. It is free to play. It's definitely worth the download. Definitely worth checking out, even if you struggled against the Innkeeper in Hearthstone. Mixer has made major changes to their channel. So this is just a little bit of the continuation of the streaming war. Not going to dive a ton into the Mixer part here, but they've made major changes to 24/7 channels, as well as follow for follow channels. Apparently it's a tongue twister too. One of the big things with this is it just continued to spam the mainstream of Mixer. When you're looking at the main window where you see Ninja and Shroud and some other up-and-coming streamers, many times those other up-and-coming streamers were taken over by 24-hour streams that's purely just music playing in a blank room or on a blank background, or a follow-for-follow stream where it's like, just come follow me and I'll follow you back. And it became very crowded for something that really was blocking content creators from getting themselves out there, from having the possibility of getting on the big screen or the main page to try to market their channel a bit more. It wasn't fair to creators, and now Mixer, after negative feedback from the community on that, is removing those channels. That's a win-win. John agrees. YouTube, on the other hand, did make big moves in the streamer world. They have, well, not the Mixer's moves weren't big, but this is much bigger. YouTube has pulled in exclusivity rights for the new Call of Duty League, the Overwatch League, and Hearthstone Esports through a deal with Activision Blizzard. This also sees Activision Blizzard using Google's cloud resources as part of the deal. So Google is being paid for Activision Blizzard to use their cloud resources, but as part of the deal, Google also buys exclusivity rights to these leagues.
Huge. Absolutely huge. Streaming wars, signing streamers versus signing exclusive events like this. That's massive. And Joey, you actually tweeted about this. Was it today? I think you sent out a tweet today or yesterday or something in regards to the whole argument of signing streamers versus signing leagues and events, which pull in arguably more at one given time than, you know, a streamer does typically. It's massive. And I think even Monte Cristo talked about this when this was finally announced, because this came out 2.5 hours before CDL kicked off. No one knew where CDL was going to be streamed. And that was one of the biggest question marks, is where can we watch Call of Duty League? And it came out with 2.5 hours, and it wasn't just CDL. It was CDL, Overwatch, Hearthstone, all of the WoW esports and everything else too. It is a massive, massive deal that YouTube just landed. And even League of Legends, when you go to watch League of Legends on the League webpage, it is a YouTube player embedded. It's not Twitch. Monty firmly believes that there's like a reason behind that. Again, not going to speculation with that, but I think that's a very valid argument from someone who is very deep in the industry, who knows Riot, who knows Blizzard Activision, and is now essentially freelance, and he's able to open up about his opinion a little bit more here. Massive, massive deal with YouTube, Joey. And it's something that we've been watching YouTube do from time to time. You know, they launched YouTube Gaming It didn't really work out. They've still been dabbling in it. But YouTube gets billions and billions of interactions and users and videos, it feels like, on a daily basis. So they have the numbers there to beat Twitch. And this is a major, major haul. And really, you can't compare this to signing a streamer. It is massive for YouTube.
Yeah, absolutely. A big, big monumental deal. And like I said before, one of the big things, and I wanted Mixer to make these moves for Microsoft, but it was YouTube and Google in the end who did it. And honestly, if we're looking at the competitive sense, YouTube and Google probably is in a better place to make this deal as far as platforms go. But with those leagues, not only are you pulling in the most concurrent viewers for a lot of these platforms, but you're also pulling in possibly teams, organizations, and players as well. If your league plays on YouTube exclusively, are you still going to stream on Twitch, or do you move over to where the league is being played? I think that's going to be a big question for a lot of these organizations and teams, as well as players. I think a number of these teams, a number of these players end up making the deal to move to YouTube because of that deal that previously got put into place with the league, because now all Overwatch content, or at least major league Overwatch content, is now on the same platform. Sticking with Overwatch League, their Paris franchise will begin the season based out of New Jersey, another blow for the league's vision of an intercontinental league. So Overwatch League, it's losing talent. It's losing major talent in Malik, in Monte Cristo, Doa, Puckett is also gone, a number of big-name talent. So you have an opportunity for new up-and-coming talent to come up, talent that has been under these guys for a few years, as well as new talent to have the opportunity to be the major leads on this league. There's positives and negatives to that. Now, on the opposite side, one of the big things with Overwatch League Season 3 is moving from being based out of LA to now having homestands every single week. So we had a couple homestands last season in Season 2. Now it's supposed to be a lot more in the home cities of these teams. With Paris being based out of New Jersey, it kind of hurts the overall global look of that. Now, with that being said, what is it, 4 Chinese teams? I think it's 4 teams based out of China. So those teams will still be based out of China, to my knowledge. And then we also have London as well over in EU. So there are still some international teams being played here. There's still a number of travel being involved. At the same point, it is a bit of a dagger for the league to see one of their EU teams already stepping back into the NA soil for the beginning of Season 3.
So I was going to try to make a joke here, but I had to Google make sure it was able to be done. I was going to say the only way this is salvageable is if they're playing in Paris, New Jersey. Fun fact, there is no Paris, New Jersey, so you can't even really make that slide. Oh, yeah, it's a huge knock. Playing in home cities was supposed to come in Season 2, got pushed back to Season 3. And the idea that London Spitfire is going to be the only European team actually in Europe, that's a huge blow to the European market and European fans. Hopefully they can figure that out, and I'd like to see them in France sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I don't think it's a major dagger. Like I said, you still have that international competition happening. I don't think this will be a permanent move either from the Paris franchise. So for now, it's a bit of a dagger, but I think that dagger gets pulled out probably in Season 3 even. Moving on to the results from this past weekend, we had a lot of big esports events, and before we wrap up the show, we have to cover some of them. Call of Duty League kicked off with its opening weekend. We had a peak concurrent viewership of 86,204. John, I'd be curious to hear your thoughts on that. With this being presented on YouTube, I think there's a few different things to keep in mind here. One, we're looking at the streaming rights deal being presented right before the league. So some people might not have heard the announcement at the beginning. Yeah, if they followed the team or the league on social media, they could have found their way to YouTube. At the same point, with it being held so late, I think it probably hurt the opening viewership of this league. At the same point, we've had our hesitations with Call of Duty League. This is a league that we are worried about because the title has changed so many year over year for the Call of Duty franchise. Will this title last 1 year? Will it last 2 years? Will it even last 3 years? I think there's a huge question mark there and how the talent changes from title to title. I think that's going to be one of the big things to watch, and I think that's why some people are hesitant to invest in the league as well. The other thing that's a little bit questionable and concerning is the LA Gorillas, one of the teams that presented and played in the opening weekend in Minnesota. They have already filed a complaint to the league regarding the use of a banned perk in their match against Minnesota's team. So you guys can look up the details on that further, but the fact that there were already seen disputes after the first weekend with only a couple teams playing is a little disconcerting for me as well. Anything else on that whopping 86,000 viewership number?
Yeah, I mean, I would just reiterate the fact that they announced the streaming deal 2.5 hours before the event happened. That's going to be tough unless you're someone who is like honestly glued to your phone or have Twitter notifications on or something like that. I honestly thought they wouldn't get a deal done before the launch of CDL, which would definitely have hurt them. I'm happy they got it done, but the real story would be what's going to happen next week. If CDL can bounce back and actually pull in legit numbers, then week one is pretty much an anomaly. Let's see if they can grow it and hold on to those numbers and grow down the line, something Overwatch League kind of struggles to do.
Yeah, I think one of the other big things here, and this is going to be something that probably gets addressed like it did with Overwatch League. When we watched the beginning of Overwatch League, it wasn't the beginning of the season. It was like a, what was it called? Like a preview tournament or inaugural tournament. You remember I'm talking about that event in December before the league kicked off? It was bad. It was exciting because it was new. It was interesting. It was intimidating. It was unique. It was very different from what we've had in other esport leagues, but it was also daunting to present the league in this way. One of the biggest issues they had was the fact that casters did not really seem to know what they were doing, and the fact that we watched the spectator cams were a mess for the beginning of Overwatch League. They were all over the place. The casters made everything sound exciting when some of it was just someone walking on the map, someone simply shooting like everyone does in Overwatch. So I think they were overhyping certain moments, and the spectator camera was all over the place. They were highlighting the wrong things. They were doing too much overhead view. Now that we're looking at this in general, Call of Duty is having the same problem. They didn't quite learn from the Overwatch League at the beginning. It seems like this is a very different production crew. I think they're going to go through those same growing pains where they try to find the balance of when to use the camera and how to use the camera views particularly well, from all those different spectating angles that they have for Call of Duty, as well as the talent. When you look at the casters, there's a lot of talented casters who've been around Call of Duty before, but this is another step up. It's a new league. It's a bigger league. People paid a lot of money to be in this league. That's one of the big growing pains they're going to have. I'm sure there were some nerves involved. I'm sure that was a big case of it. With that being said, they need to iron out the way the stream goes, the spectator view, as well as the fact that the casters need to find better ways to fine-tune the way they present the content to players. Call of Duty is a complex game. I mean, you and I have casted a number of games. Call of Duty, I feel like, is much more complex than a lot of the games you and I have done so far, just because there are so many different things to keep an eye on. And I think one of the big things for viewers as well, with so many casual players playing Call of Duty that might be interested in the eSport League, how do you find a way to find that balance? Because you and I might just have fun playing and shooting and winning games here and there, like just rotating to points and domination. But how do you explain the intricacies of it to both an expert audience, a talented audience, as well as more of a newcomer casual audience? And I think that's one thing they got to learn moving from this first weekend into later weekends of the league. Genesis 7 also happened, a big fighting game tournament, particularly known for its Smash elements. Go ahead and check out those results. We don't have time to go over them all on the show, but one big thing that came out of Genesis 7, a number of winners as well as an extended 5-year deal with Nintendo. This is Nintendo that has taken some dips into esports here and there, but the fact that they're doing a long-term deal with Genesis shows that they are continued to supporting the fighting game scene as well as the scene around Nintendo games, which Genesis has definitely built a name for. I think that is a huge success for Genesis. And then last but not least, John, we have the return of the LEC and LCS. We don't have time again to go over every single game this week just because we had so many topics to cover on this episode of Level Up, but I do want to get an idea from you. Do you have any games from the LCS or LEC that you want to highlight from this past week?
Well, the big one, obviously, for me was the initial game of the split, of the spring split just in general, was Cloud9 and Team Liquid. Kind of curious to see how Team Liquid was going to do without Broxah in jungle. Again, he was out because of visa issues. And Cloud9 with essentially a new bot lane. And Blabber, who's been off and on in jungle. How is Cloud9 going to respond? Cloud9 looked good. I would like to see how they do against Team Liquid with Broxah in the lineup. That will definitely be something to look forward to later on down the road. FlyQuest going to 2-0 as well, I thought was very impressive. But overall, not too many surprises coming out in week one. Again, the biggest highlight for me with the one that had all the question marks was Cloud9 and Team Liquid.
Yeah, I think for me, I definitely had faith in Cloud9 as well as FlyQuest. I think the bigger ones for me are Evil Geniuses. I really did not know how they would come out. They performed below my expectations in their first game against Dignitas. The other one was TSM. TSM did not look good in their first game. Immortals has looked pretty bad so far in Spring Split. Again, we're just looking at two games, but they did come out with a win over TSM in a very dull game. So I guess credit to Immortals for sticking it out, but TSM just could not find their advantages. And when they did have advantages, they couldn't find the way to close out the game. So for me, TSM being lackluster in their first game, as well as Evil Geniuses leaving a lot of question marks after their first game, were the big things that stuck out for me in the LCS. Over in the LEC, I think MAD. I mean, MAD Lions came out. This is the newly rebranded Splice. They ended up pushing G2 to their limits in game one. G2 did come out with the win, but MAD Lions really did push them. Then in their second game, they played Advanced Team Vitality. Team Vitality is a mix of veteran talent as well as young talent. MAD Lions being a very heavy young talent lineup, they came out and took down Team Vitality. So this is a MAD Lions team that people aren't really sure what to expect from them. Some people have them right around Excel, maybe making that last playoff spot, maybe falling just out. If they play like they did in week one, again, the talent is very different because G2 is up here on a high pedestal and Vitality's down here somewhere. At the same point, MAD Lions showed they are a team to deal with. They could be a very big contender as the spring split continues on. So they made it sense that they could be a top four team. We'll have to see how that plays out in week two. And just for the heck of it, John, let's do some predictions for tonight. Monday Night League. We have Evil Geniuses up against 100 Thieves. 100 Thieves took a win in their first game where Evil Geniuses fell down. Who do you take coming out of this Monday Night League matchup?
I'm going to give it to 100 Thieves. I'm not really that impressed with Evil Genius. Looks like everyone's kind of on a different page. It's almost like they did in boot camp or something. I'm going to give it to 100 Thieves. I'm going to give them the edge. Evil Geniuses looks way too disorganized at the moment.
It is going to be 100 Thieves for me as well. Just one win, not 100, but I think they do come out of this one pretty cleanly. TL up against TSM is the second match tonight. This one's a little tougher for me. I'm not quite sure who I want to pick, but I'm curious to hear your choice.
So Team Liquid still played well without Broxah. Having Broxah is definitely a step up from whatever they're going to put in jungle. Obviously, they don't have... I'm blanking on his name. Jungle Laster, X-Smithy, right?
Yeah, X-Smithy is with Immortals.
Yeah. You know, so he's with Immortals now. So they're essentially having an academy player who's, you know, kind of feeling his way with this star-studded roster. Impact is very bang or bust. He did not have a good game against Cloud9. Jensen, he played well. Double Lift played well in the bot lane. Core JJ played well. If they rely on what they know and their game style and just essentially don't rely on jungle so much to provide those ganks to really kind of give them a head that way, they may need to take it a little bit slower. I think Team Liquid could take this. TSM was not impressive. TSM in spring split historically is bad. And we saw that in their first game, not able to capitalize on the leads they had, not able to capitalize on objectives. They kind of threw everything. If they had a gold lead, they would absolutely lose it 2 minutes later. So TSM is still trying to figure things out. Don't worry, TSM fans out there. I'm not trying to trash your organization. Just historically speaking, they're bad in the spring split. And the joke in the past was spring split doesn't really mean anything anyway. You know, wait for the summer. Well, now that spring split literally means nothing, figure it out for summer and you'll be fine. Simple as that. But I feel like both teams are going to be going through some growing pains at the moment until the visas and everything get figured out. But I'm going to give the edge to Team Liquid here over TSM.
Right. This is not going to be the full power of either team yet. My biggest thing with TSM is they didn't listen to me in the offseason. I've told them this multiple seasons. You need to go with a jungler that plays a supportive style. That's what Bjergsen likes. That's what works for the team. They went out there and they went with a more aggressive jungler in Darduk. I think it's going to end up backfiring. At the same point, I do think they upgraded their bot lane considerably. Kabe is not your top tier ADC. He's not the best out there. Your support is not the best either. But the bot lane in general is going to be a very consistent bot lane. And I think they're going to be good enough to stick up with Core JJ and Double Lift against the best bot lane arguably in NA. I think they're good enough to hold their ground and stay even at the very least. I think that's a huge advantage for TSM. Now, when we look at this, Broken Blade, in my opinion, is a little broken here and there. And I'm not talking like Leona broken, like that good. I'm talking like he needs some work to be done. I think Impact has the opportunity to take advantage of him, but I think at the same point, having Schurnfer in there, Schurnfer, is that his name? Schurnfer? What's the third string jungler's name?
I think you're right.
Something like that, right? Like yeah. Schurnfer, Schurnfire. Anyway, TL jungle number three. He's coming in here, and I don't know if he's going to have the impact on Impact's lane that he needs to give Team Liquid the advantage they can find. At the same point, Bjergsen's been around for a year and a half, 1,000 times. over and over and over. Bjergsen feels like he's been on TSM since I was born. Then on the opposite side, we have Jensen, who has been with Team Liquid for a year now. He's very good as well. Very strong, talented mid laner coming over from EU. Both EU mids, fun fact. I think that's going to be a very key matchup here as well. How can Darduk impact that lane? Can he find Bjergsen the advantage he needs up against a younger talent? I don't know what that answer is going to be. So I actually don't know who I pick here. Can I pick a tie?
No, this isn't Europe.
I think I'm going to go TSM, actually. I think I'm going to go TSM just because of the veteran talent. I think, again, Team Liquid has a lot of veteran leadership, but I think the fact that they have a jungler in there that's a little bit nervous on the stage, that's newer to the scene, that's only practiced with the team for a couple days, with jungle being such a key position this season, even with Liquid being so powerful in all the lanes, I think the fact that their jungler is not up to par just yet is going to be the big downer here. So in a very close one, I'm going to take TSM to slightly edge them out. And last but not least, Sean, the LPL, China's League, the LPL of the World Series title in League of Legends. I guess we'll call it the World Series. They've won Worlds 2 years in a row now. We had Invictus Gaming, and then we had Fun Plus Phoenix win this past year over G2 Esports. They are suspending Week 2 action this past week due to the coronavirus breakout in Wuhan, China. They have said that this delay could last all the way up until April. So we're looking at a possible very, very, very slow start to the Chinese powerhouse in the LPL. If this ends up being the case, I think it will have a major impact on Worlds, which is also set to be held in China this year, with the region getting such a late start too. So again, they can scrim as much as they want, to my knowledge. I mean, you can do that online. They don't necessarily need to play in these official matches, but at the same point, we've seen it time and time again. Scrim results do not equal onstage results in a LAN environment. That could be a very, very big difference maker for the LPL if this does become an extended stay.
Yeah, and let's put this into perspective. The coronavirus outbreak is a serious world. It's not considered an epidemic yet or a pandemic, but anytime there, you know, at the end of the day, it's a video game, guys. It's a competitive video game, and real world stuff comes before any of that. You know, player safety, player health, the health of fans. It makes sense. The coronavirus has already killed a lot of people. A lot of people are infected worldwide. Joey, there's even cases in our own backyard here in Northern Virginia that people are being quarantined for. So it is a worldwide issue at the moment. So it's a smart move for China to do what they're doing and kind of putting a lockdown on some of the cities that are heavily affected and thus affecting the LPL as well. So it's good that Riot and the LPL are taking that extra step for player safety and player health and fans health as well. So hopefully they can figure out what's going on with the coronavirus. They can get a cure out there real quick and we can get back to what we all know and love. And that's competitive League of Legends in the Chinese scene. Well, Nation, that will do it for another episode of the Level Up Podcast. But before you go, head on over to patreon.com/OTN and consider becoming a part of the Overtime Network. In return, you will get access to exclusive content that nobody else in the world can get, unless they are a part of the Overtime Network. If you enjoy listening to the Level Up Podcast, let us know. Leave us a review on Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, and Google Play. We would love to hear from you. In fact, we love to hear from all of our listeners so much, we have other ways for you to reach out to us. Joey, where else can the Level Up Nation go to interact with us and this show?
Level Up Nation, head on over to Instagram, Twitter, and or Facebook and find us at the Level Up Podcast. That is the LVLUP Podcast. In addition to that, you can also find us streaming regularly on Twitch. This show around 7:15 p.m. Eastern Time on Mondays. That's twitch.tv/OTN_live. We also have other streams throughout the week as well. Come check it out.
All right, make sure you tune in next week as we cover the latest and greatest in gaming and esports news. Do your ears a favor. Hit that subscribe button to know when the next episode of the Level Up Podcast is ready for your listening pleasures. We will catch you all next week. Remember, be nice to your fellow gamers online. And as always,
Level Up.